What's the worst thing you have ever done? Story 1. My best friend and his father were in a car accident 5 years ago when we were both 16. His dad didn't survive, and my friend ended up in a coma for 12 weeks. I spent a lot of time at the hospital and at his house, trying to support his family however I could. His mother was struggling more than anyone. A few weeks after the accident, she had an emotional breakdown while driving me home from the hospital. She told me she couldn't be alone that night and begged me to stay for a while. I agreed, not wanting to leave her in that state. We went back to the house and she poured me a glass of wine, trying to ease the overwhelming grief she was feeling. That night changed everything between us. She was lonely, lost, and looking for comfort, and I was too young to fully understand the weight of it all. It was something that should have never happened, but it did, and it didn't stop there. In the weeks that followed, she sought me out whenever the pain became too much, and I never turned her away. But everything changed when my friend finally woke up. The moment he was released from the hospital, it was like an unspoken agreement between us. We kept our distance, avoiding each other as if nothing had ever happened. To this day, we never talk about it. Story 2. When we were 10, my best friend and I were constantly bullied by a kid who lived in our complex. He was the worst kind of bully, the type who acted perfectly sweet around adults, but turned into a nightmare when no one was watching. One day, after he pinned my friend down and forced him to eat something disgusting off the ground, we decided we'd had enough. We wanted to make sure he never did anything like that again. So we grabbed an empty cleaning bottle, filled it with a mix of household chemicals, and went looking for him. When we found him, he smirked and asked my friend if he was still hungry, making it clear he had no regrets. The second he stepped closer, I squeezed the bottle and sprayed him right in the face, a few times just to be sure. He ended up in the hospital with chemical burns and lost vision in one eye, with partial blindness in the other. For years, we never heard from him. But then, out of nowhere, he messaged me on Facebook. Instead of anger, he sent an apology. He admitted to how horribly he had treated us and, to my surprise, even thanked me for what happened. He called it a real eye-opener. His words, not mine. Now he works exclusively with blind children and says it's the most fulfilling thing he's ever done. Story 3. I posted this before, but reading this thread brought it all back again. I grew up poor in a dysfunctional household in a rural area. My parents struggled, and my siblings and I often went hungry. As the oldest, I tried my best to take care of them, but one day I failed in the worst way. When I was 7 and my little brother was 5, I was playing outside when he came up to me, holding a sandwich he had managed to put together from whatever scraps were in the kitchen. It was just one slice of bologna between two squished, dried-out pieces of bread. No cheese, no condiments, nothing extra. But to us, it was something. I don't know why I did it. Maybe it was jealousy, maybe just a childish tantrum, but I knocked it right out of his little hands onto the dirt. He immediately burst into tears and bent down to pick it up, desperate to salvage what little he had. Before he could, a group of the scrappy neighborhood dogs, like the kind every poor rural family seemed to have, rushed in, knocking him over and devouring it before his eyes. He just lay there in the dirt, crying, covered in dust, repeating over and over, "I made it to share with you." I'm 30 now and we have a close relationship, but I still think about that moment every single day. I don't know if he remembers it, and honestly, I hope he doesn't, but I do, and I don't think I'll ever forgive myself. Story 4. It was a Friday night, sometime around midnight, when I was walking downtown after leaving the bar. I had parked a few blocks away since city parking is a nightmare on the weekends. About halfway to my car, when the streets had emptied out, someone came up behind me, tapped my shoulder, and told me to hand over my wallet, or as he put it, it will be bad. His hand was shoved deep in his pocket, and I didn't know if he had a gun or a knife, but all I could think about was getting stabbed or shot, and I really, really didn't want that to happen. Before he could make a move, I reached for my wallet, but instead I grabbed the knife I always carried. Without thinking, I shoved my hand into his face, then stabbed him in the stomach. Once, twice, three times, then I ran, as hard and as fast as I could for what felt like a mile, maybe more. I never looked back, never told anyone, never called the cops. It felt like doing that would only put me in a worse position. I have no idea what happened to him, and I don't think I ever want to know. Story 5. I was 11 years old when it happened. My grandmother, who was raising me, was out running errands, and I asked her to bring me an Oreo McFlurry from Dairy Queen. She said no. It was out of her way. I kept asking, hoping to change her mind, but she refused. About 2 hours later, she came home. Instead of pulling into the driveway, she stopped at the end of it and just sat there for a while. It was strange, like she was considering leaving again. Curious, I went outside to see what was going on. When I walked up to the car, she rolled down the window and handed me an Oreo McFlurry. She had the biggest smile on her face, happy that she had surprised me. But instead of being grateful, I was still upset that she had said no earlier. Without thinking, I took it and threw it down onto the lawn. I remember the way her smile instantly faded, the confusion and hurt on her face as she stared at me. She passed away from cancer a year later. I'm 24 now, and that moment still haunts me. She had already raised her own kids, yet she chose to raise me too. She was the best person I've ever known, and I hate that when I think of her, this is the first memory that comes to mind. Story 6. This past summer, I was walking through a big city in an unfamiliar neighborhood. It was early evening, a few hours before sundown, in a quiet residential area about 20 minutes from the city center. The streets weren't empty, but there weren't many people around either, just a few scattered pedestrians and light traffic. As I walked, a car sped past me, then turned down a street I had just passed. It was going way too fast for a residential area. From the half-open passenger door, I heard a woman yelling something. I barely processed it, assuming it was just a group of reckless people messing around. I kept walking. So did everyone else. It wasn't until later that night, when I thought back on it, that I realized what she had actually screamed. "Help!" My stomach dropped. The fact that neither I nor anyone else on the street did a single thing to stop or check on her made me feel sick. No one called the cops. No one followed up. No one did anything. To this day, I have no idea what happened to her. Maybe it was nothing. Maybe it was something horrifying. And the worst part is, I'll never know. Story 7. A few months ago, I took a road trip with my wife and kids. On the way back, my son suddenly needed a bathroom break, so we pulled over at a rest stop. When I got out to help him, I noticed a wallet lying on the ground. Back in the car, I opened it up and found several credit cards, a social security card, a bank card, a driver's license, and $879 in cash. There were also a few other personal items. I looked up the guy on Facebook, sent him a friend request, and messaged him, letting him know I had found his wallet. 2 weeks passed with no response, so I contacted some of his relatives. Eventually, he called me. Instead of thanking me, the first thing he said was that I should bring it to him, an hour and a half drive away. I told him that wasn't possible, but I could meet him halfway over the weekend. His response? "That's messed up, bro." Still, he agreed to meet. During our conversation, he casually admitted that he had no idea how or when he lost the wallet because he had been fing-hammered. The weekend arrived, and I showed up at the meeting spot on time. I waited for over 30 minutes before he finally called, saying, "My bad, bro. I was at the bar with my friends and forgot about you. I'll be there in about 10 minutes. It took another 45. When he finally arrived, he walked up looking obviously drunk. Before even acknowledging me, he muttered, "One sec, bro. I gotta piss." Then he disappeared into a nearby building, leaving me standing there. Something in me snapped. I had gone out of my way to return his wallet, and he couldn't even show basic respect. My inner voice said, "Screw this guy." So I took the cash out. Seconds later, he walked back over, and I handed him the wallet. He snatched it from my hand, barely said thanks, and walked away. I never heard from him again. Story 8. I wouldn't have ended her life. I could never have done that. She had only a day left. Cancer had destroyed her liver. Her skin had turned yellow, and her body had swollen so badly that she could no longer move her legs. Legs that had once carried her as a ballet dancer. She had a Hickman line in her chest, a tube that was meant for chemotherapy. That night, she decided to cut through it, intending to bleed out on her own terms. She looked at me and whispered, "Why isn't it working?" It wasn't working because of her low blood pressure. If she had been standing, it might have worked. I should have let her go. I knew she was dying. I knew she was suffering. But instead, I closed up the tube, stopping the bleeding. I told myself it was the right thing to do. But deep down, I knew the truth. I was just too selfish to let go. She had always been brave. She had chosen to face the end her way. But I was weak. And because of that, she suffered another day. Story 9. This happened 20 years ago. I grew up in New York, attending a school where I was one of only three white kids. There were also a couple of Hispanic students, and the rest, around 2,300, were black. I was a typical inner-city kid. I listened to punk, I skateboarded, I liked bands like Dead Kennedys, but none of that mattered. Because of the way I looked, I was labeled a skinhead, and that label made me a target. I got jumped, a lot. Eventually, I left school because of it, but this is the story of the moment that pushed me over the edge. There were twins at my school. Let's call them John and Jonte. They made my life hell. One day, I was standing in front of my locker when they snuck up behind me. I felt a hard slap on the side of my shaved head, so hard it left my ears ringing. I spun around, ready to fight, but stopped when I saw them and about 15 others blocking my way. The principal stood on the other side of the crowd, smirking. He saw what happened. "He did nothing," I muttered. "You'll get yours. Alone." That moment came later that day. I saw John heading toward the stairwell. We were on the third floor, and the sight of him walking toward those stairs sent something dark through me. The years of abuse, the broken bones, the humiliation. It all boiled over. I ran at him full speed. Just as he reached the top step, I jumped and kicked him, both feet slamming into his back and the back of his head. He flew down 15 stairs, hitting the wall at the bottom. I heard the screams, but they were distant, unimportant. Rage had taken over. I sprinted down after him, saw his body lying there, unmoving, and I jumped, landing both feet straight onto his head. That sound, I can still hear it. He needed surgery. I ended up in a boys' home. And to this day, I feel horrible for what I did to him. People say violence changes you. They're right. Years of getting beaten down, humiliated, and ignored by the very adults who were supposed to help me. It turned me into someone else, someone capable of doing what I did. Before you judge me, here's something to think about. 2 years before that day, I was skating home with my friends. John and Jonte spotted us, and John, yes, the same John, picked up a full Snapple bottle and threw it at me. It shattered the bridge of my nose. They ran, my friends chased after them, but they got away. I was left bleeding in the street. That was my childhood. That's the world that made me. And even after everything, I still wish I had handled it differently. Story 10. This still haunts me to this day. When I was 13, my parents bought me a hunting slingshot. Along with it, they got a pack of large metal ball bearings for ammo, but kept them hidden, telling me I wasn't allowed to use the slingshot unless they were home. 15 minutes after we got back, they left for a few hours. My brother, his friend, and I immediately snuck into their room to take the slingshot, but we couldn't find the ammo. Our house was built on an old hazelnut farm, surrounded by trees and full of squirrels. So we started picking up fallen hazelnuts and using them instead, shooting at random targets in the yard. We were terrible at it. We hadn't hit a single thing. Then a squirrel came down onto a low branch just 10 feet away. My brother's friend had a nut loaded, ready to fire. As a joke, I told him to aim at the squirrel. None of us actually expected to hit it, but this time we did. The nut struck the squirrel right in the side of the head. It fell out of the tree, landing hard on the ground. At first, we thought it was dead, but then it started kicking, only with the 2 feet on the right side of its body. The left side was completely paralyzed. Then came the screaming, the most awful, high-pitched, blood-curdling shrieks I had ever heard. It spun in circles, unable to move properly, as blood bubbled from its nose, mouth, and even its eye. My chest tightened. I swear I could feel its pain. I knew what I had to do. I grabbed a thick branch from the ground and slammed it down on the squirrel as hard as I could, but it didn't die. I hit it again, and again. I was hitting it with everything I had, but it kept twitching, shrieking, suffering. It took at least 8 or 10 hits before it finally stopped moving. When it was over, I felt sick. I dug a hole and gently placed the squirrel inside. I petted its fur, whispering, "I'm sorry," over and over before burying it. I'm 31 now. Almost 20 years have passed, but I still think about that day. It still makes me sick. Story 11. Years ago, I was addicted to coca, and to support my habit, I started selling it. That was bad enough, but one weekend, I took things even further. I had just picked up a large supply and planned to rent a cheap motel room to hustle for the weekend. On my way there, I had a friend in the car with me. He spotted a girl walking down the street and asked me to stop so he could say hi. She told him she was headed to a well-known area for crack. I laughed to myself because I knew I had the purest coke around. She asked what was funny, and I asked if she knew how to cook her own. When she said yes, I told her to hop in. No need for her.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
To go buy weak, overpriced crack from someone else. I had the real stuff. She got in. My friend had already told me she was a crack addict and a prostitute, and that's when my coca-fueled brain started spinning. When we got to the motel, I sold her $10 worth. She cooked it up immediately and took a hit. The moment she inhaled, her eyes widened, and she turned to me, asking if I had enough to keep her going all weekend. I told her, as long as you've got the money, I've got the supply. For the next 2 days, I watched her fall into a cycle. She'd buy a small amount, cook it, smoke it, then leave to sell herself for more money. Then she'd come back, buy more, and do it all over again. I could have made the money I needed by selling to a few regular customers, but I didn't. I let it keep going, not because I had to, but because I wanted to see what it felt like. At the time, while I was high, it felt exhilarating. Looking back now, I feel disgusted with myself. Story 12. I lost my temper so badly over the phone with my wife that I scared her away. Literally. Now we're getting a divorce, and she wants nothing to do with me. We met in 2006, right before I enlisted. We broke up when I left, but remained on good terms. In 2008, after most of my training was complete, we got back together. I deployed a few times between then and 2010. In January of that year, she moved across the country to live with me. That August, we got married. A few weeks later, I went on vacation alone to visit family because she couldn't take time off work. Maybe that was a bad call. Who knows? The following month, I left for the longest period since she had moved in. 11 months away, with only one visit, Christmas, when I flew her out to see me before I deployed again. This time, I went to Afghanistan. I didn't like it. It smelled awful, and the locals didn't want us there. When I came back, I was different, quick to anger, withdrawn, slow to forgive. I started drinking heavily. She became the target of my frustration, and she absorbed it all without complaint. Let me be clear, I never physically hurt or threatened her, but my words did plenty of damage. In March 2012, I deployed again. This time was better, less of the awful stench, better views, and fewer bullets flying our way. By August, I was back home. I kissed my wife, then immediately left for vacation to see family again. This time, I didn't go alone. I brought a female friend. Nothing ever happened, but the damage was done. My wife was crushed. Two depressed people in a marriage don't work well together. Looking back, I can see the cracks forming. It makes me sad to realize how inevitable it was. We tried counseling, but only made it through one session before she moved out. The official reason? I wanted to separate and move to Oregon, and she didn't want to live on the West Coast. But I know it was deeper than that. A week later, she came over. And we spent an evening together, trying to hold on to something that was already slipping away. The next day, I felt uneasy. I needed to see her. I told her as much. She, overwhelmed and stressed, decided to go to a party instead. That was the final breaking point. I lost it. I flew into a rage, on the phone, off the phone, pacing the house, spiraling. I threatened to burn all of her things. Not because I actually wanted to, but because seeing our memories scattered around the house was too much to handle. It tore me apart. She showed up with the cops. I had scared her, terrified her. I sat in shock as she quickly grabbed more of her things and left. That weekend, I did nothing. Just sat there drinking, playing video games. No food, no appetite, no motivation. It hit me too late that my inability to control my anger, my drinking, had cost me my marriage. Tomorrow, we're meeting at Panera. I'm going to ask if we're beyond reconciliation. I hope we aren't. Story 13. When my wife and I first started talking years ago, there was a guy who had liked her for much longer than I had known her. He couldn't let it go. As my relationship with her grew, he refused to back off. At first, I tried to keep things light. We had been decent friends, but he just wouldn't drop it. It escalated to the point where we almost fought a few times because he couldn't keep his mouth shut. Here's some backstory. Before all of this, he had a child with a girl. One afternoon, while traveling to a neighboring town, they were in a car accident. Both she and the child were killed. It destroyed him. Fast forward to when he had reached full stalker mode with my wife. I had enough. I tracked him down, got in his face, and told him that he had nothing left. That the only people who had ever truly loved him were gone. That maybe it was time for him to go join them. It worked. He cut off all contact with her and me. Eventually, he left town. Years later, he found someone new. He's married now with children. He moved on. He's okay. At the time, I felt nothing. I was just glad he was gone. But looking back, I realize it was probably the most horrible thing I have ever said. And no matter how much time passes, I don't think I'll ever forget it. Story 14. I met a close friend in 2006, and over time, we became really close. He didn't have many friends, and the ones he did have only stuck around because he had good weed. He got picked on a lot in high school. His father was a raging alcoholic, and his mother had left when he was 11, never contacting him again. A couple of years ago, we got into a fight. I don't even remember what started it. All I recall is that it had something to do with a joke he made about my mom, and I took it way too personally. The argument escalated until I stormed out of his house at 3 in the morning. Before leaving, I turned to him and shouted, "Go fing kill yourself, you worthless piece of S. No one febbing loves you." I walked away furious. He kept trying to call me, texting me nonstop, leaving voicemails where he was just sobbing, saying how sorry he was, how he didn't mean it. I ignored every single one. After about a week of silence, I got a call from his father. My friend had gone into his garage and shot himself with his uncle's 45. It's been 2 years since his death, and I still hate myself for it. It was my fault. I could have forgiven him. He was broken, abandoned, struggling his whole life, and I, his only real friend, was the one who told him he was worthless. I can never and will never forgive myself for that. Story 15. When I was a senior in high school, a girl asked me to prom. I didn't know her well, but I had heard she had a crush on me and had finally worked up the courage to ask. She was sweet, kind, and genuinely excited about going together. She even offered to buy the tickets and split dinner costs. I figured, why not? I was single, and she seemed nice enough. Then the day before prom, my best friend invited me on a skiing trip with his family that same weekend. His older brother couldn't make it back from college, so they had an open spot for me. 3 days of free skiing, a cabin, and time with my best friend. Without a second thought, I said, sure. And immediately called the girl to cancel. I told her, sorry, but plans change. That was it. When I told my mom, she looked like she was going to kill me. And honestly, I probably deserved it. She absolutely destroyed me. For an hour straight, she let me have it, making sure I understood exactly how awful I had been. And then she told me what I was going to do. Drive to the girl's house, apologize, and own up to hurting her feelings. I've always been ashamed of that moment, but I think it changed me for the better. I never wanted to feel that kind of shame again, and from that day forward, I tried to be a better person. Story 16. I've been abusing alcohol for about 10 years, drinking alone to the point of blackouts 3 to 4 nights a week. Everyone who knows me in my sober hours would probably describe me as a decent, respectful person. At least, that's what I hope. In May, I bought my first car. Since then, I've driven drunk at least 30 to 40 times. I never planned to. But once I started drinking, I'd sometimes panic that I didn't have enough for the night. That desperation would push me to get behind the wheel in search of more. Somehow, I've never had an accident. But I know that luck runs out. This behavior isn't just reckless. It's a death sentence waiting to happen. A few weeks ago, I finally took a step forward. I started attending AA meetings. I don't know if I can buy into the whole higher power concept, but I'm 17 days sober now, and for the first time, I feel like I might actually have a chance to break free from this cycle. More than anything, I know that if I don't, it's only a matter of time before I kill someone. I am deeply sorry for my actions, especially to anyone who has been affected by drunk driving. I can't believe I let myself become this person, but I don't want to be him anymore. Story 17. While on patrol in Baghdad, I accidentally shot a child. We were ambushed and the kid got caught in the middle of the firefight. He had been taking shelter in a courtyard, but at some point fear overtook him and he tried to run back home. It was an instant, a single awful second. I had my sights locked on an alley just beyond the courtyard gate, convinced that was where the enemy fire was coming from. When the child suddenly ran, I reacted on instinct. I pulled the trigger. 7 rounds hit him. We secured the area and rushed him to a local hospital, but if I had to guess, he didn't make it. That moment has stayed with me for years. I've thought about it more times than I can count. Along with other parts of my deployment that weren't exactly heroic, I don't know what to make of it all. It's just been strange. Story 18. Earlier this year, I found out my fiancé was cheating on me. The second I knew, I cut her out of my life. No second chances. No explanations. Even though every part of me still wanted to be with her, I refused to let myself stay. 2 months later, she called. Her father had committed suicide that night. I was devastated. He had always treated me like family, and I saw him as a second dad. His death hit me harder than I expected. Months passed. I cycled through every emotion imaginable, grief, anger, heartbreak. But despite it all, I never really lost my temper with her, not until the night she called me again. We had booked a vacation together before the breakup, and since I had paid for it, any changes had to go through me. She wanted to know if I could transfer the reservation so she could take him, the guy she cheated with. I usually don't explode. I can count on one hand the number of times I've completely lost it, but that night, that was one of them. I told her to fuck off, that I'd rather lose every cent than help her take that guy on a trip we had planned together. She fired back with the usual venom. You're a piece of sassin. Leaving you was the best decision I ever made, and so on. And then without thinking, I snapped. At least I still have my Fing dad, you Fing whore. I hung up before she could say a word. A few seconds later, I realized what day it was. Exactly 6 months since her father died. I felt sick. That wasn't me. That wasn't the person I wanted to be. No one had ever made me feel so much anger before. Then again, no one had ever made me feel as much love or as much pain as she had. But the strangest part? After that night, I felt better. Like I had finally let go of something I'd been carrying for too long. It was a turning point. And after 8 months of anger, I was finally ready to move on. Story 19. I used to beat up my little brother when we were kids. There was a decent age gap between us, which just made it even worse. It wasn't just sibling roughhousing. It was bad. I'd bruise him, sometimes worse. Once, I even knocked out one of his baby teeth. We fought constantly, but it was never really a fight. I would snap over something small and lose it completely, taking out all my pent-up rage on him. I was angry, helpless, tormented at school, and had no idea how to deal with any of it. So I made him my punching bag. One day after something particularly bad, my mom dragged me into another room, shut the door, and just stared at me in disgust. Then she said, "What the hell are you doing to your brother? He looks up to you, you know." That hit harder than anything she could have punished me with. In that moment, it was like a weight crushed me. Here was my little brother, looking up to me, wanting my approval, and I had become the very thing that tormented me. Worse, even. That was it. I turned it around completely. Never lost my temper with him again. I apologized and spent the rest of my time at home trying to be the best brother I could be. Over the years, we grew close, and he became the family member I missed most when I moved away. But no matter how much time has passed, I'm still really, really sorry for what I did. I apologized to him years ago, and he just laughed it off, saying it didn't matter. But it does. I still feel that black mark on me, something no apology can erase. I still remember that moment. That feeling when you realize you've crossed a line you can never fully make up for. Story 20. When I first met my wife, she was married to another man. I found out after a study session with her that he was abusive. She was stuck, financially dependent on him, still in school, trapped in the cycle that so many battered women find themselves in. It was heartbreaking. Then one day she showed up to class with a black eye. I didn't even have to ask. I knew exactly who had done it. I got up, left the classroom, and found two of my frat brothers. I told them I needed their help and to not ask questions. They didn't hesitate. We went straight to where her husband worked, lured him into the parking garage, and beat him within an inch of his life. He spent 4 weeks in the hospital with internal injuries, multiple fractures, a brain bleed, and a detached retina. While he was recovering, I sent him a Get Well Soon card. Inside, I told him to divorce his wife, and that if he ever laid a hand on her again, his family wouldn't be planning a hospital stay. They'd be planning his funeral. I meant it. If my brothers hadn't physically stopped me, I probably would have killed him that day. Shortly after, he filed for divorce. My wife had to drop out of school and take a job waiting tables to get by. That's when I stepped in. I helped her however I could, supported her, and over time we fell in love. She has no idea what I did that day. To this day, she thinks her ex was mugged during his lunch break, and I'll never tell her otherwise. Story 21. The worst thing I've ever done was recent, and I have no idea how to fix it without completely destroying my life. Long story short, I cheated on my wife, but how it happened is what makes it so much worse. My wife and her brother are fraternal twins, incredibly close, practically inseparable. Because of that, I've spent a lot of time around her brother and his wife. We all knew each other well. One night, my brother-in-law was out of town on business, so we invited his wife over for dinner. My wife got called into work. She's a nurse in the ER, so it was just the two of us sitting by the pool drinking wine. After a few glasses, we started playfully pushing each other around. She lost her balance and fell in. While her clothes were drying inside, we sat there talking, her wrapped in nothing but a towel. Then at some point, the towel came off. The next thing I knew, we were having S. I wish I could say it ended there, that we both felt awful and agreed to pretend it never happened. But life doesn't work like that. A few weeks later, she found out she was pregnant. She and her husband had been trying for a while, but apparently he had fertility issues. He had been out of town for a full week before that night, so we both knew the truth. It was mine. When she took a pregnancy test, he was the one who was with her. He was over the moon, thrilled that they were finally going to have a baby. He immediately told all their friends and family. Meanwhile, I sat there, watching everything unfold, trapped in my own personal nightmare. Somehow we've kept our cool. No one suspects anything, but it's only a matter of time before it all falls apart. My wife and her brother are Asian. Both me and my sister-in-law are white. That baby's going to look nothing like its supposed father. And to make things even worse, my wife is 3 months pregnant too. Every day I wake up knowing my entire life is a ticking time bomb. I can't sleep. I can't think about anything else. I don't know what to do. All I can do is wait for everything to come crashing down. Story 22. It still baffles me why I did what I'm about to confess. I've never been someone who values objects much. I hate spending money on things I don't need, especially electronics. I still use an old phone and a laptop so outdated it can't even run Minecraft without freezing. One summer night in a secluded university computer lab, I noticed an iPod left at one of the stations. Without thinking, I stole it. It was the first personal item I had ever stolen in my life. I didn't even care about stealing. I didn't really listen to music, and I knew it would ruin someone's day, but I did it anyway, without hesitation. The headphones were nice too, but I didn't need those, so I left them behind. Maybe the owner was relieved to still have them. Maybe it just confirmed their worst fear, that someone had intentionally taken their iPod and left everything else. It was a 160-gig iPod, a nice one. I hardly even used it. At most, I put a couple of gigs of music on there, and only really used it during workouts. Eventually, it got stolen from me at the gym. When I realized it was gone, I didn't even care. I just nodded to myself, accepting that I was now part of this apathetic cycle of people who have no respect for personal property. Story 23. When I was 9, my brother and I lived with our single mother. She had a boyfriend? I don't know if that's the right word. Looking back, she was his mistress. He was married. She hated him, but every time he was around, we had more money. One night, he woke me up at 1 a.m. and asked me to go through my mother's phone contacts. He wanted me to read out every name to him. I knew something wasn't right, but I was too young to understand what. So I did what he asked. For some reason, I skipped any names I thought he wouldn't recognize. But then I got to one. Jacob. He stopped me immediately and asked, "Are you sure it says that?" "Jacob?" His voice was urgent. I confirmed it, finished the list, and he let me go back to bed. I didn't tell anyone about that night until now. A few weeks later, my mom, my brother Jacob, and I were sitting outside our house. Yes, the same Jacob. He was actually a chill guy who lived down the road. My mom was talking to him while my brother and I played in the dirt. Then I noticed a car pull up across the street. Ed stepped out, his expression twisted with anger. He was drunk, and he had a gun. My mom turned to him, her laughter dying instantly. Her face froze. Then she screamed for me and my brother to run into the house. I bolted up the driveway, expecting them to be right behind me. Before I could turn back, I heard a gunshot. My mom screamed. He had missed her, but the fear in her voice was worse than if she had been hit. I scrambled up the steps and into the house, locking the door behind me. I don't know how much time passed. It felt like forever. Maybe it was just seconds. Then I cracked the door open and looked outside. At first, I saw nothing. Then I heard a gurgling sound. I looked down, and everything in me went ice cold. My mother was lying at the bottom of the stairs. At first, she looked normal, like she had just fallen. But then I saw it, a gaping hole in her neck. Blood was pouring out, soaking her shirt, staining her necklace, choking her as she tried to breathe. She made a sound I will never forget, a horrible, wet, gurgling noise as she drowned in her own blood. And my little brother was just sitting there. Watching, I lost it. I ran through the neighborhood, screaming. I don't know how long I ran, how long I screamed. I just know that my grandparents, who lived across the street, eventually came home. I ran to them, begged to use their phone, begged them to go to my mom. I called the hospital, trying to remember everything I had ever learned in school about emergencies. I was going to save her. Then they asked for my address, and I gave them the wrong one. My brother and I were taken in by neighbors. People trying to comfort us, telling us it would be okay. The ambulance was on its way, but it didn't arrive. Not soon enough. By the time it did, they covered my mother with a white sheet, and I knew what that meant. I woke up the next morning convinced it was all a nightmare. But reality is a cruel, unforgiving thing. The world had lost one of the most wonderful people to ever exist. Ed chased Jacob down that night, shooting him but failing to kill him. Then he drove home, parked outside with his wife and son just feet away, and put a bullet in his own head. I know, logically, I'm not to blame, but I helped him find out about Jacob. My mistake made the ambulance late, and my greatest shame, I'm certain I closed that door. I locked my mother and brother outside. Story 24. I hit a human being on the interstate and possibly dragged what was left of them for 100 yards. My friends were in the car ahead of me, and they hit him first. The person had been ejected from a vehicle just minutes before we arrived. His body flew from under their car and then straight into mine. The sickening crunch, the violent shuddering of my car, it was undeniable. We had hit him, too. We pulled over, our bodies in shock, trying to comprehend what had just happened. When I stepped out, I realized we were still dragging something. It turned out to be just the gore-splattered front bumper, barely hanging on. The scene around us was surreal. Dozens of people had stopped their cars, standing on the shoulder, staring. When I asked what I should do, several told me to just leave. So I did. The next morning, I walked outside and saw my car sitting in the driveway, looking like something straight out of a horror movie. The trunk was splattered with human remains. And then it hit me. I had to get my front right tire replaced that same day. It had gone flat hours before the accident, and I couldn't afford to delay it. I knew what had to be done. I grabbed a hose, but the freezing temperatures had turned everything solid. Every bit of flesh, every stain, frozen to the metal. I spent what felt like hours scraping and scrubbing, using a bucket, pliers, and a sponge. Cleaning off the undercarriage was the worst part. Every movement made my stomach turn. That day still haunts me. Not just the accident itself, but the way I had to wash away the evidence. Like it was just another mess to clean up. Story 25. I was the only witness to a wreck on the road near my job. One of the people involved had managed to crawl away from the wreckage, but the other car had flames crawling up from the hood. It looked like it was about to explode. As I sat there frozen, I saw an arm stretch out from the passenger window, reaching for help, helpless, trapped. Every instinct in me screamed to get out of my car and pull them to safety. But then I thought about a friend of mine who had been in a wreck just the week before. He had pulled an unconscious victim from their car, trying to help, and they ended up suing him, claiming he made their injuries worse. That was all I could think about. Instead of running to help, I called the police, reported the accident, turned right at a red light, and didn't look back. I don't know what happened after that. I don't know if that person survived, and I've felt guilty ever since. I don't know if I could have saved them, but I'll always wonder if I should have tried. Story 26. I have cerebral palsy, and because of that, I was bullied relentlessly as a kid. Between kindergarten and sixth grade, I had to change schools 3 times. Kids pushed me into walls, beat me up, humiliated me daily. I used a walker to get around, and that only made me an easier target. When I started at my last school in fifth grade, there was one kid who made my life hell. He was massive for his age, at least 200 pounds. and he wasted no time making sure I knew my place. On my third day there, he shoved me down the stairs leading into the gym. I ended up in the ER with a dislocated shoulder. 3 months later, he was standing by the boys' bathroom, talking to his friends. As I passed by, I heard him say something about how I would never have a girlfriend because I walked like a duck. I wasn't a violent kid. I never had been. But that day I snapped. I walked straight up to him and swung my walker like a baseball bat, smashing it into his nose. At the same time, my balance gave out, and I fell into him, knocking us both backward. As we hit the ground, another student walked out of the bathroom. The door swung open, the knob slamming into the back of the bully's head. Later, I found out it had cracked vertebrae in his neck and permanently paralyzed his right arm and hand. After that, no one ever bullied me again. They just called me Crazy Duck instead. Story 27. I had to put my dog down. I grew up in the middle of nowhere, Missouri. When I was 17, my beagle, Ralph, was hit by a car. He had been my best friend for years, through every lonely night, through all the times I felt like I had no one else. Ralph was always there. I saw it happen. The car was going at least 60 in a 35. It hit his rear end, sending him spiraling off the road like a rag doll. It was a nightmare, one of those moments where you just know there's no coming back from it. The driver never even slowed down. I ran to him, convinced he was gone. But when I reached the ditch, he let out the most painful, chilling whine I had ever heard. It made my blood run cold. I scooped him up, skipping school that day, carrying him home. No one was there. Even if I could drive, the nearest vet was hours away. His eyes met mine as I carried him up the driveway. It was the longest walk of my life. I laid him down on the porch, wrapped him in a blanket to keep him warm. The cold air wasn't the reason he was shaking, though. I sat with him, petting him, waiting for him to go, but he wouldn't. That's when I realized what I had to do. I went inside, grabbed my father's .22, loaded two rounds. When I returned, I carried Ralph to his favorite spot in the yard, where he used to dig holes just for the hell of it. I laid him down, pet him one last time, trying to convince myself I was dreaming. I leveled the rifle to the back of his head. "Goodbye," I whispered. He looked up at me, as if he understood. He licked my hand one last time, then rested his head back down. I pulled the trigger. Then I pulled it again, just to make sure he didn't suffer. I wrapped his body in the blanket, dug out one of the holes he had made, and buried him there. Then I sat by his grave and cried. I know it was the right thing to do, but it still haunts me. Story 28. I was friends with this girl in college, but honestly, she annoyed the hell out of me. She didn't have many other friends, though, and for some reason, I stuck around. Then she met this sleazy guy. I couldn't stand him. Rude, crass, ignorant. The kind of person who thought lying and messing with people was peak comedy. When they got engaged, she asked me to be her maid of honor. Looking back, I should have said no and cut ties then and there. But for some reason, I agreed. Throughout the wedding planning process, she bugged me more and more. The closer we got to the big day, the more I realized how much I just did not want to be around her anymore. But I had already committed, so I followed through. On the day of the wedding, I did my duty, stood by her side, smiled, made my speech. But I didn't even stay for the whole reception. I had another friend's going away party that same night, and I chose that over staying at her wedding. When I hugged her goodbye, it was the last time I ever saw her. I just stopped answering her calls, never reached out again. She had a habit of making me feel like crap, always picking on me, bringing up my personal problems as the punchline of her jokes in front of other people. So I don't regret ending the friendship, but what I do feel bad about is disappearing after being in her wedding. I imagine her looking at those photos, maybe showing them to her kids one day, and seeing me there like some kind of ghost. Just a face in the background of a chapter of her life I had no real intention of being in. That said, I did find out years later that they got divorced, so at least I was right about one thing. Story 29. When I was 17, I decided that my senior year was going to be different. I had new clothes, a new car, a new mindset. It was going to be my year, but there was one problem. The guy who had been picking on me for years. For nearly 4 years, this guy had made my life hell, and I had never fought back. Never yelled, never raised a hand, never even pushed back when he shoved me. I thought ignoring it would make it stop, but it never did. Day one of senior year, he picked up right where he left off. By day two, I was already unraveling. By day three, he spit on me. That was it. I had enough. That night, I went home, grabbed a bat and a ski mask from my closet, and walked to an old hardware store in town where he always hung out after school. He usually got there before his friends, so I knew I'd have a small window of time alone with him. I hid behind a dumpster and waited. When he showed up, he was smoking. Maybe a cigarette, maybe a joint, I didn't care. He had his back to me, completely unaware. I crept out from behind the dumpster, my hands tight around the bat. "Surprise, mother four!" I called out, lowering my voice so he wouldn't recognize it. He turned around and I swung the bat. The first hit cracked across his head, dropping him instantly. I hit him again, once in the chest, then again. He never even made a sound. He was out cold, and then I ran. I took off, sprinting through an old rundown neighborhood where no one was around to see. 6 blocks later, I ditched the bat and mask in another dumpster, caught my breath, and hopped on a bus. I rode it for a while, got off a few stops from my neighborhood, and walked the rest of the way home. Told my mom I had been at the library hanging out with friends. She didn't question it. I never got in trouble. Never did anything to make her suspect otherwise. The next day at school, he wasn't there. By lunch, I overheard people talking. He was in the hospital. Broken jaw, a fractured rib, and a cracked vertebra. He couldn't even tell the cops what happened. Just wrote on a piece of paper that someone had attacked him with a bat. No one saw anything. The guy who did it was never caught. Story 30. I hope you're serious about asking for the worst thing, because I've never told anyone this before. I dated a girl for the first 2 years of college. We were incredibly close. First love, the kind of relationship that felt like it would last forever. At some point, she confided in me about something she had never told anyone else. At the end of her senior year of high school, she had been raped by a black football player. She couldn't even imagine telling her parents. I remember holding her as she cried, telling her it didn't change the way I saw her, that she was still the same beautiful, kind, and pure person I loved, that what some pathetic excuse for a human being had done to her didn't define her. It became one of the reasons we were so close. By sophomore year, I started realizing that she had a very clear expectation, one that came from her upbringing in a deeply traditional family. She wanted us to get married soon after graduation. And while I loved her, I wasn't sure I was ready for that. I had seen too many young marriages fall apart, too many people end up trapped, resentful, unhappy. After months of agonizing over it, I finally told her the truth. I wasn't ready. And if that was what she needed from me, it wasn't fair to either of us to stay together. I told her I needed the summer to figure things out. She was devastated. My friends who still spoke to her told me she cried every night for over a month. It broke me, but I truly believed I was doing the right thing. The summer was hell for me, too. I missed her more than I thought possible. Then at some point, she started dating again. And of all people it was, of course, a black football player at our college. She still called me. Still texted me. She wanted to see me the second school started back up. It was obvious she wanted to get back together, but wasn't brave enough to say it outright. And I still wasn't sure if it was the right thing to do, because I still wasn't sure about marriage. So we danced around it, and she went back to him. I didn't know the guy personally, but I knew his reputation. He was a player, a guy who used girls, broke their hearts, moved on. The thought of her with him made me sick. It scared me for her. But I kept my mouth shut. Then one night we had a massive fight. She threw every dagger she could find, said I had never really loved her, that I had broken up with her just so I could sleep around, which was completely untrue. I couldn't even look at another girl for months after we broke up. That night I got blackout drunk, the drunkest I have ever been in my life. I don't remember anything about it. But the next day I woke up to the aftermath. At some point during the night I had sent her a text, a horrible, cruel, unforgivable text. Among other things, it said, "You must have enjoyed it the first time. The second I saw it, I felt like I had been hit by a truck, like my soul had left my body. I couldn't believe it. I didn't even know I could say something like that, especially to her. I apologized in every way a person can apologize. I did everything I could to make up for it, to be there for her, to show her that it wasn't who I was. And she accepted my apologies. She still came to me as a friend when she needed someone, but I know she'll never really forgive me, and I don't think I'll ever forgive myself. For a long time, I thought about ending my life over it. I lay awake at night, staring at the ceiling, wondering how I could have ever said something like that. How some dark, hateful part of me I didn't even recognize had surfaced in the worst possible way. I still wonder that, and I don't think I'll ever have an answer. Story 31. When I was about 7 years old, I hadn't realized I needed glasses. My entire world had always been blurry, and I just assumed that's how it was supposed to be. One day while playing at the park, I saw what I thought were my friends on the walking path across the field. Without thinking, I took off on my Top Gun 10-speed bike, the one with the broken brakes. The path was narrow, only about 5 feet wide, elevated slightly like a small dike. As I sped toward them, I yelled, expecting them to move out of the way. But they didn't. And as I got closer, I realized, too late, they weren't my friends. It was an elderly couple, probably in their 80s, just out for a walk. I panicked and tried to stop, laying my bike down sideways, but I was already moving too fast. I plowed straight into the woman. I will never forget the sight of her bloody face, the look of sheer horror on the man's face, the way they just stood there, silent. They didn't yell, they didn't curse at me, they didn't have to. I still see her face sometimes, vividly, even 20 years later, and I still feel like absolute shush. Story 32. When I was 17, I nearly beat a kid to death at a party. My dad started me in wrestling when I was 6, and by 10, I was training in MMA. Against the average person, any fight was almost always unfair. I could handle myself. This kid, he was one of those guys who always had a pack of friends with him, jumping people, beating on kids who couldn't fight back. He had been doing it for years. That night, when the party started winding down, his friends left, but he was still acting like the same asshole, shoving people, picking fights, showing off. Then he slammed my little brother, 15 years old, onto a concrete pad. I saw my brother's head bounce off the pavement, and the worst part? The other kids just stood there grinning. They watched. Something in me snapped. I ran full speed and crashed into him, slamming him against the side of the garage. In an instant, I was on top of him, raining down blows. 5 or 6 punches in, he stopped fighting back. But I didn't stop. I couldn't stop. I kept going, hitting him again and again, until 3 guys had to physically pull me off him. He ended up in the hospital for over half a year. Severe brain swelling, multiple fractures, internal damage. From what I've heard, he's never been the same since. He thinks slower now. He struggles with basic things. I see him every once in a while when I go back home. I know what I did to him. And while I feel bad that he's disabled now, I don't regret it for a second. Because if I hadn't done it, my little brother could have been the one with his skull cracked open on the concrete. Story 33. When I was in 5th grade, I got bullied a lot. My dad always told me, if someone picks on you, kick the shit out of them. So I did. This kid, Brandon, had been beating on me for a while. I don't even remember what started it, but that day something in me finally snapped. I stood up to him, pushed back, then saw a rock on the ground. I knew I didn't stand a chance in a straight-up fight. He was bigger, stronger. If I didn't do something fast, I was going to get wrecked. So I kicked him in the shin, grabbed the rock, and hurled it at his leg. It hit with a sickening crack. He screamed. He fell. And before I could even think, I kicked him in the ribs as hard as I could. His leg was broken, so was a rib. He screamed so loud, a horrible gut-wrenching sound. The rock had torn a deep gash in his leg and there was blood, so much blood. His parents were surprisingly understanding. They didn't press charges, just asked that we apologize to each other. I had a broken nose and a cracked rib too. It wasn't one-sided. But after that day, I never fought back again. I'm a big guy now, not just fat. Solid. If I lost a little weight, I'd probably be ripped. But I don't fight back anymore. Because I still remember how he screamed. I'm still terrified of what I did that day. And I never, ever want to hear that sound again. Story 34. I killed a man when I was 9 years old. He was my mom's boyfriend. A mean, violent drunk who liked to threaten my family. That night, he was wasted, slurring some nasty, disgusting thing to my mom. I yelled at him, too young and too angry to care about the consequences. He decided to answer me by smashing a bottle over my head. I hit the floor, bleeding, dizzy, my vision blurring from the pain. My mom freaked out, screaming that she was going to call the cops. He grabbed her and slammed her against the wall, pinning her there like she was nothing. That's when my sister ran in. She was 3 years older than me. She had seen the blood pouring down my face and knew things were bad, and she had brought a gun. She had stolen it from a friend of my mom's husband when she realized how far things were going. But the second she stepped into the room and saw him holding our mom against the wall, she dropped it. Instead, she lunged at him, jumping onto his back and biting into his neck with everything she had. He screamed, a horrible, rage-filled sound. He let go of our mom, who crumpled to the floor, half-conscious, and focused all his attention on my sister. He yanked her by the hair, trying to pull her off, but she wouldn't let go. So he did what he always did. He turned violent. His free hand, the one that wasn't holding the broken bottle, wrapped around her throat. He ripped her off of him and slammed her to the ground, pinning her by her neck. Then he
Get your exterior painting to-dos done easily with Dutch Boy Pristine Exterior Paint. With its rain rinse technology, rain naturally washes away dirt and grime. Plus, it resists cracking and peeling, making it perfect to withstand the harshest weather conditions. Save big money on pristine exterior paint and start your painting project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. The jagged glass to her throat. I didn't think. I didn't hesitate. The gun was in my hands before I even realized I had picked it up. My heart was hammering, but my fingers moved on instinct. Cocked the gun, disengaged the safety. He looked up at me, saw the gun aimed right at his head. Drop the gun or I'll... He never finished the sentence. He never got the chance to say kill her, because I pulled the trigger before he could. It was the easiest decision I've ever made. And the hardest thing I've ever lived with. He was a drunk, abusive monster. He had hurt my mother, hurt me, was about to kill my sister. I had a clear shot. He deserved it, right? But the nightmares don't agree. The nightmares tell me I was just a kid who pulled the trigger without a second thought. The nightmares remind me that I killed a man without thinking, and that's why it's the worst thing I've ever done. Story 35. I'm only 14, so I haven't had time to truly experience the world. But the worst thing I've ever done, or almost done, still haunts me. In 2010, when I was almost 13, my older brother was struggling. Our mom had been diagnosed with breast cancer, and he couldn't cope. That's when his girlfriend introduced him to coca. They moved into an apartment downtown, and one day she brought him a bag of it. What she didn't know, or maybe didn't care to check, was that the dealer had laced it with something toxic. My brother went to sleep that night and never woke up. 27 years old, she stepped over his body and left the apartment. I found out where she was staying. I learned her work schedule. I planned everything. I was going to find her, and I was going to make her feel even a fraction of the pain she had caused my family. I almost did it, but in the end, I realized something. Life had already shortchanged her. Sooner or later, she'd get what was coming to her. I can't put into words the suffering she put me and my family through. And if I ever see her again, mark my words, you'll see the story in the papers. Story 36. I've always had this issue with relationships. I'll meet a girl, think she's great, and then suddenly I'll find something, some tiny thing, that bothers me. I fixate on it, make it bigger than it really is, and push her away. I don't know why I do it, but I always regret it afterward. There was one girl, Samantha. At the time, I was talking to another girl, but things weren't working out. I vented about it to a guy in one of my classes, and he told me about his friend, Samantha, who was stuck in a miserable relationship. He wanted to introduce us. We met at Buffalo Wild Wings one night, and then the three of us went back to her place to hang out. We talked for hours. She told me about how toxic her boyfriend was. I told her about my own past relationships. She gave me her number and said she wanted to be friends. Over the next few days, we hung out a lot. I don't know if her boyfriend, who was away at university, knew about it, but we never did anything inappropriate. I don't mess with taken girls. Then things with her boyfriend got worse. She finally left him and told me she wanted to be with me. A couple of weeks later, she came back from school, and we hung out again. But for some reason, the second I saw her, I started losing interest. As the night went on, the feeling only got stronger. We got intimate. We slept together. But the whole time, something in me was already pulling away. Afterwards, she asked me to stay and watch a movie with her. I lied. Told her a friend had texted me from the bar and needed a ride. I could see it on her face. She knew I was full of sheesh. Whatever, she said as I left. The next day, she asked me if I really had to pick up my friend. I lied again. She told me not to talk to her anymore. Called me an asshole. She was right. I regret it now. She was one of the nicest girls I'd ever met. and I treated her like she was nothing. If I could go back, I'd apologize, but I don't think I'd even deserve the chance.